Hi, and thank you for tuning in to Ricky Reviews, a new spin-off series where I, your regular host Ricky, will be reviewing cool artsy pop cultural things, whether that be art or music or TV. And today I'm talking with my very special guest, Aaron, about cult classic film. And before we get started, I'm going to have Aaron introduce herself, who she is and what she does for the college, and then we can get into it. I'll probably fumble over my words a million times, but
that's okay.
My boss will fix it in post. Like to introduce yourself and what you do for the college?
Sure. So I'm Dr. Erin Grogan. I am the new Introduction to Cinema professor. So I actually was a student at Texas Tech a while ago as well. I got my doctorate through Texas Tech. So I have been involved with the theater department, the Visual and Performing Arts School. Most recently, I am going to be teaching the sections of Introduction to Cinema coming up this year.
Awesome. Well, welcome back. What can a student who's going to take the intro to cinema class, what can they expect from that sort of class?
Yeah, so this class is all online. That didn't used to be the case pre-COVID. So some people might be familiar with the in-person version of the class. There will be similarities. What people can expect from these classes is a chance to figure out how to analyze and talk about film with a little bit more deeper analysis and understanding of what goes into making a film. You can expect to watch lots of different types of movies. You can expect to see all sorts of different, examples of things that go on into the making of film and cinema. And I'm sorry, let me turn off my notifications because I think
they
are making some dings that'll probably make your life harder.
Well, that's super cool. Today we're going to be talking about cult classic films as a genre. I'm so excited because I love this sort of thing. Do you like cult classic films, or are you well versed in the idea?
Yeah, absolutely. I love a good cult classic. I love movies. I wouldn't be teaching a cinema course if I didn't. So, there are some that I love because I think they are actually pretty great, and some that I love because I don't think they're great. Yeah.
That goes, we're going to dive in right away to the question, like, what makes a cult classic? So from my understanding as a person who just watches movies and doesn't really know much about film, is that a cult classic is something that was slated to maybe do well, that didn't do well in the box office, but then gained a really like cult following after its initial release. Am I right?
Yeah. So I think so. You know, I think there's a lot of different things that can go into making something a cult classic. I think the most important part of what makes a cult classic is actually the fan base. So I think it's a really, really passionate fan base. And I think that this can come from a lot of different places. I think often a film that has repeated viewing from the same fans is something that can go into this court. And I'm sure something we can talk about is how streaming has changed that a little bit as well. I think certainly there's been a history of these being films that did not do super well at the box office. I don't necessarily know that they needed to be slated to do well and then not do well. I think sometimes you get cult classics that kind of come out of nowhere. But yeah, I think ultimately the biggest thing that strikes me as what makes a cult classic ultimately comes down to its longevity and its passionate fan base.
And one thing you did mention is streaming and how like the cinema world has kind of like evolved, because when I was like younger, there would be like independent, like indie movie theaters that would replay like classic movies. Like I went and I sat through the entire Back to the Future trilogy in one go. The Alamo does like sing-alongs and stuff for like Beetlejuice and Rocky Horror Picture Show, which are very much within the cult classic genre. Oh, so yeah. How do you think that streaming has like affected how we view cult classics?
Yeah. So I think it's a lot more accessible nowadays, not just to know what already is established as a cult classic, but also for things to maybe pick up a cult following of their own. You know, I think one of the things we touched upon was that a lot of cult classics tended to do poorly at the box office. I think that we're probably seeing a trend toward that not necessarily needing to be a piece of their definition anymore, because we have so many different streaming services. We have so much more access to the ways that we view films and shows that don't necessarily have a typical box office anymore, that I think we don't even need to necessarily reach that word flop in the same way. So I think it's interesting. It's kind of twofold. It's doing in one way, it's making things more accessible, more accessible to fan bases. But I still think there's a huge culture for the kind of established cult classic traditions as well. You said, you know, a bunch of those right there. One that stuck out to me is the Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know, midnight viewings where people dress up. You have certain things that you're supposed to say after certain lines, things you're supposed to throw at the screen. That certainly is something that I don't think will die with streaming or anything like that. But in fact, it might actually make it easier for events like that to take place, especially if something is available on a streaming service. So yeah, I think it's interesting. It's something that I think we'll still see continue to evolve. That rhythm.
Hey kids, this is Aaron, your college recruiter for Visual and Performing Arts. You know, we talk about a lot of things on the podcast, but if you want to talk about the programs that you're interested in, from graphic design to theater arts, opera music to transmedia, our newest program, visit vpa.ttu.edu or email us at talk@ttu.edu.
You said something about mainstream house servicing is like the mainstream thing. And I don't know if you're like on TikTok or any like other social media platforms, people so readily talk about films and like what is cool and what isn't. And it's not necessarily like gatekeepy, but maybe it is kind of gatekeepy, where they're like, if you don't know about this film, and this film, you're not in the know, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I feel that cult classic films are kind of coming into the mainstream, and because like they're so popularized, can we even like consider them cult classics anymore if they're so just like everywhere? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I don't know that I would say cult classics are becoming mainstream. I think we're maybe more aware of it, or just like we talked about how films might be more accessible through a streaming service. I think just the culture of the internet and how connected everyone is, I think people are a lot more aware of certain fan bases and aware of the types of things like connecting fans with each other, those knowledge of events or things like that might surround something like that. I think we're just more aware of it. I don't think that it's going to necessarily overtake the mainstream. Perhaps it's more cool, you know, maybe it's more cool now to be into cult classics. But I would say, you know, I would hesitate to say that we don't still have the mainstream as well. There wouldn't be 20 Marvel movies if we didn't still have a mainstream. And not to say that anything is bad about Marvel movies, but there's more to come, right? There are still very much a mainstream type of box office and a typical kind of movie that does well, the hit blockbusters, those are still, I think, very, very valid. It's just that we are maybe more aware of what else exists and able to connect more with people who might have those same interests. So it feels more prevalent.
That's very true. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. In regard to like Marvel movies and bigger like cinematic like blockbuster series like Marvel, Lord of the Rings, like and the Hobbit iterations, and Harry Potter especially, I feel like those things can, they're not necessarily cult classics, quote unquote, because of their initial popularity, but they have such a cult following, so that line is sort of like blurred.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. I do think the line is certainly blurred there. I think that's kind of tied to the fact that we're more aware of fans and fandoms and everything like that. Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think that I would necessarily call Harry Potter or Marvel movies cult classics because, again, they had a lot of success and they were really pretty commercial and still commercialized. You know, there are whole theme parks about them.
Exactly.
We don't have a Big Lebowski theme park, unfortunately.
Exactly. All you do is just bowl.
Right, right. But that being said, I think there is a similarity between those fan bases. And that comes back to the idea of a passionate fan base and repeated watching. And I think that overlaps. I think perhaps it's maybe the fans and the audiences that are becoming more and more similar rather than the films themselves.
One of my favorite like cult classic sort of, it's not a film, but it's a TV show. It's Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I love that
show so much. And it was created by Joss Whedon, for those of you who don't know, who like avidly describes the fan base as like kind of crazy and intense.
And oh, yeah.
People can get like that. And like you said, with the whole culture of like going to theaters and like throwing stuff at the screen, there's like certain things that people just inherently know about shows. And they're like, people's knowledge of it is like crazy. Like I could name probably the all of the actors within season one, but I'm not going to because I won't dive into how much of a nerd that would make me. But like, do you think, this is another question, do you think that a film needs to be like camp or campy to be considered a cult classic?
That's super interesting. So I think that's hard. That's hard for me to answer. And the reason for that is the idea of camp has, it, as an aesthetic, it really has a lot of roots in LGBT culture. You know, a lot of people attribute the start of camp to drag queens as far back as the 1800s. And honestly, I don't know a lot about the aesthetic itself to speak on it too much in terms of from a theory side or anything like that. But what I know of it is that, you know, it deals a lot in irony. It deals with maybe more flamboyant or larger than life kind of aesthetic styles. I think that a lot of things can be called camp that aren't necessarily camp. So I think sometimes there's some attributing of the word to things that might not necessarily really fit with it within its definitions. And I think a lot of what we might consider camp doesn't always fit that mold. What we might consider a cult classic doesn't always fit that mold. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a prerequisite for cult films. I certainly think we do see cult films that use that. Something that comes to mind is, you know, the cult classic The Room by Tommy Wiseau. I think when you're watching that, you very well may see camp, larger than life, irony and things like that. But when you think about it and know some history about it, Tommy Wiseau was very serious about making the film and believed it was going to be a very high quality film. So some of that camp is irony that was created outside of the creator. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I become a little bit more confused about where I lie in terms of, you know, who gets to decide what makes it actually part of the camp aesthetic.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't meant to be necessarily. There wasn't that intent, but I certainly think you can fit it in there as a viewer alone without that context. And so I think that's a little bit complicated. And, but I think it's a really interesting thing to question. I certainly think you see it in quite a bit, but I don't necessarily think it's a prerequisite.
Because I read an article recently that described Buffy the Vampire Slayer as campy, but I do and I don't I get where they're coming from, but also I think that just says more about the show in general in regard to the era in which it was created. It was new for its time, and thus they kind of dubbed it campy.
Yeah.
And this kind of like falls into the idea of like, what is camp? What even is a cult classic film? What in the larger artist sense, like what is art, what is film? It kind of is like a really big umbrella that's kind of up to the viewer for interpretation, because like you can consider whatever you have, you're entitled to your own opinion. And because something did well in the box office, it can't be a cult classic or this and that. It's really like in the eye of the beholder type of thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, thinking about Buffy, I think I've seen it referred to as camp as well. And I think that's where I have trouble distinguishing what people attribute camp to in cult classics. Like I said, you know, the aesthetic itself, I think, is a lot more involved than some people think. And I think sometimes people see cheesy or even kitsch as also camp. And even though those are not necessarily tied together or even related, they might be similar sometimes, but I think they are different things. And so I think people often kind of lump those together. I do think that type of stuff is often present in things that can be considered cult classics. But yeah, it becomes very subjective, I think. That rhythm.
Hey kids, this is Aaron, your college recruiter for Visual and Performing Arts. You know, we talk about a lot of things on the podcast, but if you want to talk about the programs that you're interested in, from graphic design to theater arts, opera music to transmedia, our newest program, visit vpa.ttu.edu or email us at talk@ttu.edu.
And now on to the big question, the golden question: what is your favorite cult classic? And if you don't have a favorite, do you have a top five at least?
So that is also hard to say. I don't. I don't love ordering things as favorites or things like that. Mostly just because it changes so often. It changes very often. So when I think about cult classics and I think about the things that I enjoy, some things come to mind. So we already talked about Rocky Horror Picture Show. I'm a huge fan of that film. I love The Evil Dead.
That's a good one.
Franchise that certainly is a cult classic there. I've seen people attribute Monty Python and the Holy Grail to being a cult classic. And so I would probably put that one up there. Thinking about TV shows in the world of cult, I love Buffy as well. Doctor Who, Arrested Development, those sorts of TV shows. So I like a lot of them, I think.
There's a range. And when I think about like cult classic, just because of the name inherently has the word cult in it, I think of things like The Craft or a Buffy and its spin-off Angel. And I don't know if Hocus Pocus is considered a cult classic, but
I would say it has some elements. You know, it definitely has a passionate fan base. It definitely has longevity. I would say it could fit some of those elements that we've been talking about what makes up a cult classic.
And then I'm thinking that my top one right now, like you say, my list changes like very frequently. At the top of my list is probably Jennifer's Body.
Yeah, that's a good one. That one has certainly had some resurgence lately, I've noticed.
Yeah. It's been like put onto streaming services, and that does like a lot for a movie. Like,
yep. It's also had references in, you know, Olivia Rodrigo's new music and music videos.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of pop culture resurfacing of Jennifer's Body lately.
For sure. And back to the like access of like the whole streaming thing. I don't know if you've noticed the like this really doesn't have anything to do with cult classics, but the reintegration of Twilight into the mainstream popular culture. Like every single Twilight film is in the top 10 on Netflix right now.
I have seen that. Yeah, I have. I have a lot of thoughts about the whole Twilight franchise, but I won't go into it now. But I think with that, we see a lot of what we already talked about, right? There's an element of nostalgia that can go into cult classics. There's an element of longevity and a dedicated fan base that continues to keep the spirit of whatever this film, movie, or TV show is alive and keeps it going moving forward. And I think we're probably seeing that with that as well. As the cinema instructor, I can say that I personally teach that all moving film or could be considered film and should be viewed as film in cinema. So that means that in my class, I tell people that they can apply all of these types of analysis and aesthetics to TikToks or YouTube videos, and that you can see all of these sorts of things happening there. So I think that I particularly lie in the more inclusive definitions of what is film. Certainly there could be many dissertations about that question, and I don't claim to be an expert, but that is what I make the definition in my class, at least. And so it tends to be a little bit more inclusive. And inevitably, I think it leads to that question of like high art versus popular art. And I actually think that most of what we consider high art today was popular art. Think Shakespeare, that was popular in his time. So yeah, that really leads to me being much more inclusive and less restricting in my own definitions of those things.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Dr. Rogan, for talking to me. I really enjoyed our chat, and this was so fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Of course. That rhythm.